Money isn't everything, except when you're a trader in Chicago. Ted Fishman is now a journalist, most recently the author of the book China Inc. But for 9 years, back in the 1980s, he was a trader at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, until he realized that this wasn't the best place for him. At the beginning, though, he thrived on the high living and high stakes on the trading floor.
I remember just before I traded for the very first time, I had a meeting with the head of my clearing company, which is the organization on an exchange that acts sort of like your bank and does a lot of your bookkeeping for you. And this was an experienced trader, a pretty glamorous guy, had a big shock of hair and was always wearing Italian suits. And he invited all the new traders in who were going to use his clearing corp, and he gave us a little talk. And his message to us was that we should fight for every single dollar. Don't give anything up. Out on the street, he said, people kill for $5. You should act like every $5 means something to you. And I was duly charged. My first day on the Merc was humbling, to say the least. People who hear my voice know that I have kind of a high voice, you know, kind of a Topo Gigio type voice, and it can be really grating. Well, when I screamed in the pits for the first time, the other traders around actually held their ears. And because I was trained to just like keep announcing prices of this and that and where I would buy and where I would sell, I'll pay 100 on 12, 30 at 1,000. I'll pay 12 on 100. Then you would have to check it. You say, I'm checking 12 on 100, 12 on 100. And so here I was with my loud screaming voice, and a guy came up to me and he said, why don't we just write you a check and you can shut up and go home? And then actually a guy who I had befriended on the exchange came up and made the first trade with me, and it was kind of my initiation. You know, the hazing was done and I made that first trade. Once I made the commitment to trade, I had the most grandiose visions of my future. You know, I would be one of the rich guys with a big mansion. I would earn enough money to run my own philanthropy because I was a do-gooder. And I made a lot of money. I made more money than I knew what it was, really. And I would go to Neiman Marcus and buy two Armani suits after a good day and fantasize about all the other things downtown that I would buy. And I did pretty well for a while. For me, trading in the 80s was enormously exciting, and I identify it with myself as a person who lived in Chicago at that moment when these new forms of finance were being invented. And because I came from an Eastern school where all my friends were going into Wall Street, I could look at them and say, hey, look, I'm doing this for myself. This is a Chicago thing. I'm from the city of big shoulders, and I'm making my own way in the pits. It's tough. It's rough. One thing that started to bother me on the exchange were the power relationships that exist in each and every pit. This was the most Darwinian universe I had ever seen in my life. And one day, when I was trading cattle, the markets were very, very busy, and I needed to make a very big trade into the cattle pit, and I signaled it, and I saw the broker signal back to me and nod his head and write it down, and I was confident that I was set. So I went over to collect my trade from him, and he said, I didn't see anything. And I said, well, let me see your cards. And he had my exact number of my trade. It was absolutely crystal clear that he had made the trade for me, but he simply wasn't giving up the card. Well, here I was, losing thousands of dollars with every move in the market, and I was frozen out, and I started screaming at him. I said, you have to give me that card. That's my number. That's my card. You're stealing. And he, as an old-timer, had a lot of clout in the exchange. So he walked into the middle of the pit and he said, that's it. No one trade with Fishman today. He is not allowed to trade in this pit. So here I was, stuck, losing tens of thousands of dollars. And my only recourse was to go to the head of my clearing corp, who was my protector in theory. So as I rode the elevator, I lost more and more money, and I went up to the guy who was supposed to be my protector, and he listened to it, and he said, I can see you're right. I can see you have a point, but those guys have all the power. You better go down and apologize to them. I said, apologize for what? He said, well, apologize for yelling at them. Apologize to them for anything at all. Just apologize to them. So because I was losing so much money, I took the elevator back down to the pit, and I went up to the broker who didn't give me the card, and I said, I don't know what possessed me. Of course I shouldn't talk to you like that. It's not going to happen again. So he made the trade for me. I lost like $35,000, and he made $35,000 on the trade just because he wanted to. You know, it was theft, pure and simple. I mean, I thought, on what terms will I do business there the next day? Here were guys that I relied on, and they proved to be vastly unreliable. One thing that happened that was very sobering for me was waking up one morning to the news on the radio. And the news that morning in April 1986 was that there had been a terrible nuclear disaster in the Soviet Union. And this was the Chernobyl disaster. And I just heard about this irradiated cloud that was floating over Europe, and I didn't want to get myself to work. The news was too sad. But when I did get to work, I noticed that there was more energy on the floor than usual. And I thought, well, what's going on here? Is there something I don't know? What was going on was that the whole exchange was giddy over the prospects of this nuclear disaster. And I was in the cattle pit at the time, and one of the first things somebody said to me was, well, all the pigs in Denmark are going to be dead. You know, so the cattle price, you know, went sky high. And that's when I learned the dictum that disasters are good for commodity trading. As soon as I got in the action, you know, all of that sadness disappeared and I just jumped into the game. And that disaster made me more money in one day than I had made in my entire life up to then. And after a day like that, you want to celebrate. But celebrating in the wake of Chernobyl is not an easy thing to do. And it's certainly nothing that I could talk my wife into doing. The worst day for me on the exchange was my very last day there. You know, I had been growing disenchanted for a long time. I was winding down my trading, and at that time I was trading in the stock options pit. And this was a new pit for me, and it was also the pit that was populated by the worst bullies on the exchange. There, the traders were bigger and meaner. They worked in packs. The social makeup there was something like Lord of the Flies, and there was this one trader in particular, this very sallow, skinny guy who annoyed the heck out of everybody, which is good for me because I no longer had to annoy the heck out of everybody, but he did. But he was picked on mercilessly every single day. And one day, when he got on the goat of these group of brokers who were big guys, bad guys. One of them in particular was this giant red-faced pockmarked guy, walked over to him, took this guy by the necktie, choked him, tied his tie to the rail of the pit, pulled down his pants, and then had all of the other brokers that worked with him come by and mock sodomize him. And I looked at this and I thought, wow, this cannot be the place where I make a living. This is a place in which no human being should have to make a living. And that was the moment in which I felt I could turn my back on trading for good, in which the hope of making a fortune was no longer important to me or real enough for me to stay there. I traded between 8 and 9 years. And in my first years of trading, the highs were so high that all of these negatives that I witnessed or experienced were just the cost of doing business. But as time went on, those aspects just became undeniable. It was like you show up every day to work hoping that everyone in your pit dies and you get all their money. That's a repulsive sentiment to have every day at work. At the exchange, you create these castles of rationalization for your job. You come to think, along with everybody else in those pits, that you're doing something essential to the operation of the world. But the truth, of course, in the end, is it's all about money. And it removes you from your own best sentiments, because the money and the stress are what course through your mind all the time. So if you have a social conscience, your social conscience goes on the back burner. If you have an artistic impulse of any kind, that goes on the back burner. And in a way, you know, the money becomes the substitute for everything else. Several years after I quit trading, of course, the United States was attacked by terrorists in 9/11. And the exchanges in the nation were closed. But my brother was still trading on the CBOE at that time, on the Chicago Board Options Exchange. And I went back with him to help him out on the day that the exchange opened for the first day. And there again, I saw the very same giddiness that existed after the Chernobyl disaster. Here we were with the worst domestic attack in the United States history, and the traders were running around as happy as could be. And they would stop each other in the hall saying, "You know, I don't feel good for what happened, but I'm doing great. You hate to be doing great, but I'm doing great." And they may be doing great, but I was pretty glad that I wasn't doing great that day.